It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. The comedian Roy Wood Jr. hosted this year's White House Correspondents' Dinner. He delivered a speech that was half comedy roast and half social commentary. Speaking to a room full of reporters and editors from some of the biggest publications across the country, he pointed out one of the biggest problems he sees in the media industry today.
All the essential, fair, and nuanced reporting, it's all stuck behind a paywall. People can't afford rent. People can't afford food, not healthy food. They can't afford an education. They damn sure can't afford to pay for the truth. Say what you want about a conspiracy theory, but at least it's affordable. I mean, well, unless you Alex Jones, it'll cost you about $900 million. And I understand that we have to put the stuff behind the paywall because creating the truth is important. People can't afford the truth, but you all can't afford to go find the truth for free.
Wood's speech highlighted a challenge journalists face when it comes to funding their work. Quality reporting can be expensive, it takes a lot of time, and online ad revenue alone generally isn't enough to pay for it. Paywall subscriptions can generate the kind of revenue needed to pay for in-depth journalism. That can create, though, an information gap between those who can afford to pay for quality reporting and those who can't. It's a problem that outlets around the country are struggling to work through. Some are experimenting with new and creative ways to fund their work while keeping their reporting as accessible as possible. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you get frustrated when you run into online paywalls for that article, that one article that you want to read? Do you subscribe to some publications, local, regional, national, that have these kind of paywalls? Do you feel like you miss out on quality journalism because you can't afford to subscribe to these services? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Kathleen Bartson-Culver is an associate professor and director of the Center for Journalism Ethics at UW-Madison. This summer, she'll take over as the new director of the UW-Madison School of Journalism and Mass Communication. Katie, welcome back to Central Time.
I'm so happy to be here.
How big a problem do you see this being, that there may be an information gap between people who can afford to subscribe to news services and those who can't?
I think that there's always been a problem with that, with having balanced and reliable information. People subscribed to the newspaper in the 1950s and 60s, and people who could afford it did, and people who couldn't afford it didn't. So the gap isn't necessarily something that's new. What's new is the malignancy of conspiracy theories, misinformation, disinformation that is free. So this is now available to us online when it wasn't in the 1950s or 60s when my parents were subscribing to the Milwaukee Journal.
Are there things about the economics of the news media now that makes it more of a reach for people, especially to get local reporting that's valuable to them, given the economics of the situation?
Yeah, the economics for local news are not pretty. And it relates in part to a loss of subscribers, but also, importantly, a loss of advertisers. So if you look about 10 to 12 years ago, we are now, we were at about 12% of the national ad spend. So everyone from your local car dealer to Dove soap was going toward local news. Now that number is about 2%. So you see advertising going to other places, including targeted social media advertising.
Now, the information gap we started with was between those who could afford a subscription and those who couldn't. How about between places that may be bigger cities that are packed with media outlets and smaller towns, rural communities? Is that so-called news deserts? Is that an information gap you worry about?
It's absolutely an information gap that I worry about. News deserts are very, very serious in places like Wisconsin and, in fact, all over the country. But one of the things that some research is showing is that those news deserts have increasing polarization, because they don't have the local news outlet. They're sort of nationalized in their politics. So rather than thinking about who's the neighbor I want to run for the local school board, they're more heavily fixated on, say, a Senate race in Georgia, because their news sources are more nationalized.
Let's look at different possible funding models for, you know, the online age of news. Now, for a while, there was the idea that we're going to do it all with web advertising, online advertising, which means we're going to have so many stories that go so viral and we'll get so many clicks. And how's that worked out?
It hasn't worked out. We have not solved the advertising conundrum for news in any way. And so we do have to look at other funding models. Part of that's going to be philanthropy. Part of it is going to be looking at things like nonprofit approaches, and then also public media, like we're on right now.
Mm-hmm. Now, how about paywalls? It seems like news outlets, some of the big national newspapers, have enough of a subscriber base, enough of a reach that that is a viable model.
It is, especially depending on your audience. The Wall Street Journal probably has the most viable paywall, given that a lot of businesses pay for its subscriptions for their employees. I think you are seeing some real thoughtfulness and some ethics and integrity coming into paywall discussions now, particularly when we went through COVID and people needing all of that information. Most outlets put that information outside of in front of their paywall so that you didn't have to pay to get it. And so now I hear from some editors and publishers who are saying, you know, hey, maybe it makes sense to have the latest Green Bay Packers Aaron Rodgers trade behind the paywall, but I'm going to put this election information out in front of it because, sadly, some people are more likely to pay for Packer info than they are to figure out who to vote for.
I know this isn't a brand new concern with the internet, but is there a worry that, okay, if I know a certain group of people can afford to pay for my web service, for my newspaper, I'm going to craft my news to appeal to that kind of customer?
Sure, to appeal to that kind of customer, and then also to appeal to what's the most clickable. Are we getting more sensationalism? Are we getting less substantive coverage? Those are all really important worries.
Do you think we are getting more of that? Because I know I've talked on the show about, you know, the 1800s, a newspaper publisher who had a great series on the discoveries of life on Mars with surprising detail. Like, sensationalism isn't new. Do you think it is in some ways worse now?
Sensationalism is not new, but it has more reach than it used to have. In some ways, less reach because we do have fewer super powerhouse, everybody, you know, watches Walter Cronkite kind of figures. There's more atomization, so there's more choice. But those things that are bogus are getting better reach now.
Talking to Kathleen Culver from the Center for Journalism Ethics at UW-Madison, looking at access to news, affordability of news services in the modern media age. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you subscribe to a physical newspaper? Do you pay to see the stories behind paywalls on your local newspaper, a big city newspaper, one of the national outlets? Does it keep you away, a paywall, from seeing stories you want to see? Call in and let us know at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Allison in Madison couldn't stay on the line, but wants to know about the importance of libraries in accessing news and whether that's changed with online paywalls. Now, a lot of libraries do have subscriptions to periodicals and daily papers.
I love Allison's question because I could not possibly be a bigger fan of the public library. You know, when we talk about news deserts, one of the things that we think about is what other civic institutions are important in bringing us together, in getting us to talk about the local soccer team, to pay attention to the new business opening. And I think that libraries are one of those critical civic institutions. And they are places that we can access information, reliable information, for free.
Thanks a lot for that question, Allison. You also mentioned, Katie, outlets saying, okay, maybe that Packers news, you got to pay for that, but the election news, we'll let you have at least some of that for free. I know during COVID, some paywall outlets put the daily COVID tracker information in front of the paywall, not behind it, so people get it. What other kind of distinctions could we make between, okay, this is our public service and you can have it for free versus this is stuff you got to pay for?
You know, it's such an important and vital question. And I bump into it sometimes with people who contact me because someone has tried to share something with them and they used to be able to access it if it was shared via social media. But a lot of outlets have now changed that practice as well. So I think vital civic information, there's an argument for that to be in front of the paywall. But then also each of us as citizens asking, what investment are we making in news? And that you may not enjoy your local news outlet, and it may be too expensive, and you don't want to place your investment there. Are you maybe making a donation to public media? Are you looking at other ways to support news? Because it's not just on the news media to fix this problem. All of us who need that information have to be invested too.
We're talking to UW-Madison journalism professor Katie Culver about online paywalls and the costs of quality journalism. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel like you're in a news desert in some ways, where, especially maybe for local news, local government news, you don't get a lot of reporting on it, maybe not as much as you used to? And at whatever level, do you subscribe to a newspaper, whether in print or online? Let us know at 800-642-1234. Your experiences, your questions, 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up the conversation with Katie Culver, professor and director of the Center for Journalism Ethics at UW-Madison. We're talking about journalism behind paywalls and the conflict between access to quality reporting and how to pay for it. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What kind of reporting are you willing to pay for? Is there something that you subscribe to? Love to hear what it is. Would you be willing to pay more for a particular kind of journalism, a particular coverage maybe in your local area? What questions do you have about how journalism is funded or not funded in some cases? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email at ideas@WPR.org. Katie, you mentioned briefly earlier there are nonprofit models, not just public media, public radio, and public TV. What kind of things do you see out there that look promising?
I think the Salt Lake Tribune is one of the more promising nonprofits. Startups, it's a long-standing legacy paper, mm-hmm. But they went to that model a few years ago, and they are making it work. Right here in Wisconsin, there's the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism that it's at wisconsinwatch.org. They do phenomenal work. There are a number of those peppered across the country. They're not easy. This is not easy to make these go.
Yeah. Have we seen some come and go? Are there failed models of nonprofit attempts at journalism?
Sure. Plenty of them. Plenty of them. And I think we have the opportunity to learn from those. But we also need to be sure that there's an audience to support that nonprofit approach. There are some that are tremendously successful, in fact, winning Pulitzer Prizes and the like. I'm hopeful in part, but we need to invest in it.
Something I wonder about, something I worry about is, you know, every community has county board meetings and city council meetings and school board meetings. They can be a little dry to sit through in person. I've been there. But that kind of coverage can be really important, and it might be the most important for some people. It's what's happening in their backyard. Do you see models that work in communities that may not have a huge, you know, population to begin with?
I do think there's the possibility for citizens to get involved. We're seeing more of that activity going and looking at school boards, for instance. But you're right. When there is not systematic local coverage, there are all sorts of shenanigans and malfeasance that could go on. There's the tiny community of Bell, California, lost its regional newspaper reporter, and within a short span of time, some very powerful people there had bilked their citizens out of millions of dollars because there was no journalist watching.
Let's go back to our callers now. Barry is with us in Green Bay. Barry, hello.
Hello.
What did you want to bring up, Barry?
Yes, I'm interested in your conversation. I equate having a subscription to your local newspaper with patriotism. I mean, I know that the media has been called the fourth estate. I can't imagine that any of the other three, portions of the government would in any way be functional without having a critical media. We've seen evidence of the fact that now the judiciary has rejected the scrutiny of the other two branches of the government, and what other alternative is there but to have the media shaming them continuously? And it's going to take years probably to get that judicial institution to begin to actually shine the light on its own.
Gotcha, Barry. Thanks a lot for the call. There's a Thomas Jefferson quote, I think, that I'm
going to
butcher here, but I'd rather have a press without a government than government without a press, something
yep.
like that.
Yes.
That reminds Barry's thoughts. What do you think?
Yeah, I think Barry is spot on, and thank you for recognizing the role of journalism. Now, that's not to say that journalists always get it right, mm-hmm. that they always serve as the best check on other powerful institutions. Sometimes they're very much in line with other powerful institutions. Mm-hmm. But I think we have example upon example of example here in Wisconsin and across the country where we are served as citizens by the work of journalists who do their job with integrity.
Thanks a lot for that call. Chris joins us now in Fairchild. Chris, hi.
Yes. So first off, I just wanted to say thank you to NPR for putting a spot on this, as always. Terrific. And second of all, I don't know if my wife and I are kind of the exception to the rule, but we are constantly, regardless of paywall, trying to seek out the most fair and honest reporting to make the best judgment of government or what's going on locally. So unfortunate as it is, in as much as I disagree that it shouldn't be, journalism has to be funded in some form. So if we have to, we're happy to pay for it if need be.
And Chris, may I ask, do you and your wife subscribe to any particular outlets?
We run the gamut. We go around the country. I'd like to go to look at what's going on in L.A., San Diego, New York, Chicago, to try and get a feel of what's going on around the country, and it helps give a balance to what a reporter might be bringing forward.
Chris, thanks for the call. Katie?
You know, I think, Chris, thanks again, Chris, for being a great news consumer. I think you raised an interesting point that makes me remember I should have pointed to two other things. So really in the area of antitrust, that's something where news organizations are held up by law from cooperating and setting subscription prices and that sort of thing and subscription agreements. So, you know, as Chris tries to look at Arizona, L.A., wouldn't it be great if he had one central, you know, news subscriber account where he could go to all of these other outlets? You know, everybody is like, oh, I pay for this Gannett paper, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, but I go to the Gannett paper in Tennessee to try to find out what's going on there, and I can't log in. So I think that's an important element. And then also related to antitrust, news outlets have not been able to band together to deal with big tech when it comes to setting ad rates. And that's a real problem. There was an effort to push that forward, a bipartisan effort in Congress last year. It went down in flames, unfortunately. But that's something that we're going to need to look at too.
Chris, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Katie, for years I was hearing like, okay, we're right on the verge of microtransactions for media. So, you know, I'm online a lot for my job. And hey, there's this cool article in the Miami Herald or Philadelphia Inquirer. The model was supposed to be I could put $50 into an account and I'd open this article for $1. That seems to have disappeared. I haven't heard anything about that lately.
Well, a lot of us were hopeful that if Elon Musk were living on planet Earth instead of on Mars, that's what he would have done with Twitter. He would have turned it into a micropayments platform that actually could have helped support publishers for the work that they do put out. I haven't lost all hope, but again, we're not going to see any forward motion on that when we have antitrust restrictions on publishers.
Thanks again for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to Katie Culver from the UW-Madison Center for Journalism Ethics, looking at how we pay for our news, whether we pay for our news. Still time for your call at 800-642-1234. Dan joins us now in Eau Claire. Dan, hi.
Hi. Say, there's a site on the internet called archive.is. It's pretty easy to get to. It's about a week behind, but almost every article printed in this country and around the world is posted on that. It's a free service. And like I said, it's about a week behind, but it's, you know, if you can't afford it, you can afford this.
Dan, thanks a lot for the call. I've seen links to this. I'm not sure how it works legally and or ethically, Katie.
Yeah, there's some real intellectual property questions around this. But some news outlets are trying, testing being part of free services to bring people in and then drive them to other content and bring in more eyes on their ads. So just be careful. Anything that's offered for free, always ask what's the quality of that and do they really own it?
Speaking of, thanks again for that call. Speaking of, you mentioned the links between social media and journalism. Obviously, a lot of people on social media share links to journalism. A lot of questions about how the money flows, who ends up profiting from this. The infamous pivot to video from a few years back where Facebook basically single-handedly persuaded newspapers to start doing more videos that I think hardly anybody watched. Your thoughts on social media and how it's affected journalism?
Well, it's affected journalism in a lot of ways, but one of the ways that I like to point to the most is that it's important to think about ethics right now, not just in terms of journalism, but in terms of all public communication. So, you know, journalism is my life, and I will love it forever. But it's one piece of our information ecology. And if the other pieces of that ecology are toxic, then we have problems. You know, I noticed in the news break leading in that we saw that we were hearing a news story about an amazing rise in youth voters. That is not driven by local newspapers. That is driven by TikTok. And so if we have a prayer for the future, it's got to be that all public communicators feel a sense of responsibility to truth and to minimizing harm and the like.
Yeah, that's it. It's a constant dilemma, even for us at public radio. How much do we do on a social media platform? How reliable is that platform as ownership changes, whether that's Elon Musk or a Chinese company owning TikTok? How are you seeing journalism outlets try to navigate that?
I think a lot of journalism outlets recall very well the hard lesson they learned with the, quote, pivot to video, and almost universally lost money on that experiment. So I think there's a little bit more of a conservative approach now, but definitely an emphasis on younger users, readers, viewers, and bringing in that audience. And given that they're more politically engaged than their predecessor generations, maybe they will turn more to news. I can only hope.
In just our last minute, what do you have your eye on now? What is on the horizon that has you excited and or worried or both?
Actually, that youth engagement does have me very optimistic. My glass is very half full with the generation that's coming through my classrooms right now. They're smart. They want to be informed. They want neutral information, and they really care. They want a world that aligns with their values, and that makes me very optimistic. Now, if I can just convince them to read up for something other than answering my news quizzes, that'd be great.
Katie, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always great to be here.
Kathleen Bartson-Culver is an associate professor and director of the Center for Journalism Ethics at UW-Madison. She was with us today to talk about the role of online paywalls in news coverage and how we can make high-quality reporting financially viable for news outlets and their audiences.